We appreciate the presence of each one today. We're glad that you're here. As you see, so many of our people are out of town, but we're glad that we can be here to study as we did in our Bible class, and then to worship God in spirit and in truth. I asked Peyton to lead that psalm, The Great Physician, because that's what I'm going to be talking about this morning. That's the title of the lesson. I probably preached another lesson in days gone by called this, but this is the new lesson. And each time we come back to the same subject or whatever, we try to make some advancement. We try to increase our understanding. And we never want to forget things just because we know them. We don't want to dismiss them. We want to realize the value of them, the significance of them, and maybe add just a little bit of understanding to our knowledge as well. You know, setting aside the salvation of a person's soul, I would suspect that his health, a person's health, is his greatest blessing. Now, I said it, not counting the other. That's the greatest blessing, salvation. But if you're not counting that one, what would be the greatest blessing that you would think of? Lloyd mentions it in his prayers, his public prayers, all the time. And all of us should focus on it as well. The health. We're grateful for the health that God gives us. We know from Scripture and from experience that in the course of human affairs, the normal development of a person is that he lives, if he lives long enough, if he's not cut off prematurely, he lives to experience the normal deterioration of his faculties. And that becomes, in some cases, very restricted. Some cases are mild. Some cases are severe. And many people, before they ever leave this life, spend a certain amount of time bedridden. Not everybody. Some people have strong constitutions and they're out and about until they pass away. Others are being cared for because they can't care for themselves. Some are in the bed from which they cannot even arise. And so it's a normal thing. Ecclesiastes 12 describes the normal condition of an old person, and we've been over that in various lessons before, and it's still so very much true. But it's also the case that given accidents and given diseases, that many people are debilitated or lose their faculties, some of them, in their youth. Many people don't wait until they're elderly to have great restrictions laid on their well-being because they were in an accident. Maybe they were in the war. Maybe they contracted some heinous disease and it still has its lasting, awful effects. In the first century, Jesus Christ faced people not only that were sick, sometimes in old age, sometimes in youth, but there was the added complication of demon possession. Demon possession. And we've wondered about it, we've studied about it, we've preached about it, thought about it. It's a curiosity. It's odd in a way. But it seems that in human history, all of a sudden, there was this new health phenomenon that you had to deal with. Because now, not only was it the case that people grew infirm or became immobile or impaired in the natural development of life, but now all of a sudden there was an added force from the devil himself, in cahoots with the devil. that was able somehow, some way, to inhabit human bodies and cause all kinds of misery. Sometimes it's blindness, sometimes it's deafness, sometimes he caused the loss of speech. Could take control of persons in their minds. One man lived at the cemetery, ran around without any clothes, made it hard on other people that lived in the area. Sometimes, you know, it was just heartbreaking cases. But let me suggest two things that happened because of that. And I think it was a momentary divine arrangement in the providence of God that allowed God, in a momentary moment in history, to express complete divine compassion through Jesus and then later the church. Ultimate compassion, in a sense. And also, by demon possession, to demonstrate, if you missed it before, you need to understand that the devil is all about human misery. On this earth, he might be about other things, you know, in the heavenlies, but on this earth, he's going to create all the misery he can. He's not your friend. And so I think when you think about demon possession from those two points of view, you get the summation, overall view of the why of it. And so when Jesus in His ministry is described in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, you know, the Galilean ministry, the Judean ministry, the Perean ministry, when He acted as the healer, so many of those cases had to do with demon possession. And people could testify to the absolute misery in the life of the person so possessed, and in the fallout on the friends and loved ones in the community. And then they could see Jesus, and then later they could see the church with the gifts of healing and see the power of God. And there was no contest. Divine compassion was far greater in power than the power of the devil himself. There should never be a question about that. There shouldn't have been already. But in case there were, it should not be in your minds now. People on the earth today can identify with a woman in Mark 5:25 who had spent, Mark says, all her money on her health. She had a health issue, had been sick 12 years. That's a long time to have the same problem. And she had spent all her living trying to get better. We want to feel good, don't we? She had spent all her money. She had suffered many things of many physicians. She was nothing bettered and even grew worse. And isn't it amazing that in the 21st century, there are people still on the earth that can testify to that kind of a life, that kind of condition? Well, that's my case. I've had this problem for years. I can't tell you the number of doctors I've been to, and I've spent a fortune. And I'm not any better. In fact, I'm getting weaker. I'm a little weaker now than I used to be. Isn't that something that we share a situation like that with those alive when the church was established? Think with me today about Jesus as the great physician. There's several verses. I don't know if we ought to take time to read them or not. Maybe I can. Matthew 9 and verse 12. In Matthew 9 and verse 12. But when he heard it, he said, "They that are whole have no need of a physician, but they that are sick." Jesus was responding to criticism. He was sometimes around sinners. "Don't you realize," he said, "that the person that needs the doctor is the man that's sick?" That's one of those verses that refers to a physician. In Luke 4:23, when he visited his hometown of Nazareth, and he was reading from Isaiah in the assembly, and then he began to speak, he said, "No doubt you'll say to me, 'Physician, heal thyself.'" That didn't sit well with his audience. In fact, when his speech was over, they wanted to kill him, and they tried to. But there are two verses, at least in Scripture, where it comes up. You know, Jesus, in a sense, did function somewhat as a physician. Of course, basically, he came to deal with spiritual ills. But in the doing of that, as an accompaniment to that focused work, he healed people on occasion. He didn't have time to heal everybody. There are only so many hours in a day. He couldn't go everywhere and see everyone and visit every sick bed and all that. That's not what his mission was basically about. But it was secondary. And we learn a lot of things when we think about him from that point of view. Number one, let me say this. Jesus Christ made house calls. Now, I'm old enough to remember, Alicia is too. I remember one time when I was a little boy, the doctor coming to our house to see me. That's the only time I've got one image in my mind. I remember the doctor's name, but that's the only time I remember that. And we were at a time in our culture where that was really just getting to be, I guess, on its way out. Didn't last much longer. But they got to be on the tail end of an era there where doctors would still come to your house to see you, check on you, ask about you, diagnose your case, and then prescribe what they thought was best. And you know, when Jesus Christ was on the earth and somebody wanted Him to help somebody that was sick, He would sometimes make house calls. Matthew 8:17, He said, "I will come and heal him." Now, months ago, we decided that centurion that was asking for help for his servant was probably Nicodemus. But Nicodemus, or whoever this centurion was, according to Luke's account of this, didn't come personally. He sent some of the Jewish elders to Jesus. Since he had helped them, and they knew it, they could vouch for him and ask the Lord to help his servant. And so these Jews come to ask Jesus to help Nicodemus' servant. And they say, "Lord, you need to do this for him. He's a good man, and he's spent funds on, he's helped thy people." Jesus said, "I'll come and heal you." And then, when he gets closer to the place, you know, Nicodemus said, "I don't want you to come into my house. I'm not worthy. I don't want you to come in. Just say the word, and my servant will be healed." But I think about that because that bespeaks the availability of Jesus' healing powers. The care that He's able to bestow. And when He had John write the church to Laodicea in Revelation 3:20, when he had his mind on sick brethren, I use that term because they're apostates, the church at Laodicea was lukewarm. It's full of sick, spiritually sick Christians. And Jesus says, "I stand at the door." That's your house, your heart. "I stand at the door and knock. If any man hear my voice, I'll come in and sup with him." Isn't that something? My first point is simply, as I think about the Lord and His healing powers and His nature and His kindness and His love, Jesus was willing to come see you. He was willing to visit those that were hurting and needed help. He was willing to make house calls. Number two, He really cared, and on occasion He would ask about the particular case. I remember Ronald Reagan one time in one of his speeches talking about American medicine. And you know, really, brethren, we can criticize a lot about it, and we have a right to. And we can criticize the fraud and the deception that goes on. And sometimes you can even criticize doctors or nurses because they're uncaring. Usually it has been our experience that when we have to have hospital care or doctor care, it's been very thoughtful. Now that's been my experience. Maybe there are a few exceptions, and there are doctors and patients will say, "Well, boy, I just don't like the way he acts. I don't like the way he treats me. I don't like the way he doesn't wait around and answer my questions. He's got a terrible bedside manner." There are criticisms that have been offered, and I'm sure there are quacks, and I'm sure there are people that are mostly concerned about the money than they are about the people. That's probably true. I think most of us would agree that in our country, in our culture, that has been so influenced by Scripture, most of those who have tried to care for us have indicated some genuine concern. Genuine care. And I remember President Reagan talking about how that we don't want the care of, you know, the Russian mentality over there, whatever it's called, or like the German Gestapo or whatever it is. We don't want somebody over here just pretending to have care like somebody in a godless culture might have to do. We want the doctor to really care. Really care. Every time Jesus cared. It was never a fake. It was never a pretense. He didn't have a house call mask or, you know, some mood that he struck in a formal setting to pretend, to carry the appearance of pretension. Wasn't like that. Wasn't like that. He cared. Sometimes I ask about the case. He said one time in Matthew 20:28, "You know, I didn't come down here to be ministered unto." And he showed in the way that he treated people that that was his mindset, whether they were sick or not, but the sick got it too. "I came to minister unto, not to be ministered unto." And that's the way he felt. And in Mark 9:1, before he gave the remedy for a case that he was called upon to look at, he said, "How long? How long? What's the amount of time that this boy has been in this condition?" Now that would also undergird the quality of the miracle he was about to perform. And the father said, "Why, this has been his problem ever since he was young. Ever since he was a youth. This has been..." And it was a sad, sad situation. Jesus was the kind of physician that always cared. And sometimes he would just ask, you know, what's the matter here? What do you want? Or what do you need? Or how long has it been like this? Let me just say this in passing too. In the twilight hours of our lives, God knows how long we've been here. And God knows all the maladies and infirmities, physical, spiritual, you know, emotional. He knows everything that a spirit passes through. And He doesn't have to inquire of the angels. He knows. And He knows how much I can take and how much you can take. And God always wants to help. And He has the temporary and the permanent. But He always wants to. He cared. And that brings us to the third point, which is something like that. But He says He wanted to help. Matthew 8:1-3. Matthew 8:7. He wanted to help because He cared. That's really the way we work. If I care about somebody, I want to help you because I care about you. Even my enemy, I love you, not like a kinsman, but I love you, and I love my brother I love you. And so if I care, I'll do what I can to help. All of our lives we try to walk in the steps of Jesus. Well, He cared and He tried to help. I want to be available to help. I may live in a small place, but I'm available to people that are here, people on the internet. I try to make myself available in certain situations, phone calls, you know, things that I'm asked about. Care. Don't run out of caring. Don't get to the point in your life where you say, I just don't care anymore. Well, I can understand not caring about some things. But don't refuse to care for your brother. Don't refuse to care for your loved ones. Don't refuse to love your enemy. Don't refuse to love the church. When you die, when your last moment is being spent, you should pass out of this life in love. And love for your family, love for your brethren, love for the truth, love for God. Jesus wanted to help. Matthew 4, His credentials were special. And of the highest order. You know, you've gone into a doctor's office and you've maybe seen certificates on the wall where he went to school. He went to school at this place or this place or this place. And you know, colleges and medical colleges, they'll have their own reputations. Some are considered better than others, I'm sure. But your doctor, you know, he graduated here. Then maybe he went on for some special education beyond the MD degree. Medical. He went on for some other special. And he gets certificates on that to show that if you had this particular problem, he's even available and able to help you with this. And you read that, he said, oh my, that took a lot of time. That had to take a lot of work. And that's why I'm here at his office. Because he can help me. I recognize his credentials. Sometimes there are people that have faked their credentials. Dr. Green, Ben Green, he used to practice veterinary medicine in Fort Stockton years ago. Some questioned his medical, his veterinary credentials, even though he was a good vet. It seemed that perhaps his credentials were not all in order. At least they were questioned. Jesus' credentials were of the highest order. He's able to help. How is that? He's our Maker. John 1, 1 and 2. Everything that God made was made through Him. Jesus is our Maker. Here's somebody that needs some help. Well, I can fix that. He's able to fix it because He made it. Credentials of the highest order. Isn't that amazing? Matthew 17, 5 at the Transfiguration. Matthew 3, 17 at His baptism. On those two occasions, the Father said, "This is My beloved Son." The great Physician is the Son of God. And God made us through the Word who became His Son. Can you have higher credentials than that? Number 5, He always knew what was wrong. Now, Lloyd's had a recent experience, and all of us perhaps have had experiences somewhat similar to that, in that sometimes we've gone to the doctor or we've gone to the veterinarian. I need you to look at this or consider this. Can you tell me what's wrong? And maybe you've heard. I remember, even though I think the vet had it pretty well pinned, I heard a veterinarian say to me one time about a given horse, he said, "I don't know what's wrong with it." Now, that's the only time I've ever heard that. From vet or MD. They usually are not that forward with you. But at any rate, sometimes they just have to face the fact, we just can't get it figured out. And as Lloyd knows, you can take various examinations and they'll take various pictures. And modern medicine has advanced so much, it's staggering as to what they can do. But with all of modern technology and all the advancements, you can still go to the doctor and come home. Well, what did he say? Well, they haven't got it figured out yet. They ran all the tests they knew to run, but they haven't got it figured out. Jesus wasn't like that. In no case was he like that. He always understood what to do. His diagnosis was always correct. Three times in the book of Acts, we are told that God knows the hearts of all men. Isn't that something? How come salvation is so relevant? How come the gospel is so practical to every person on the earth? I need it. Why? God knows my heart. He knows my body, and in the first century, Jesus dealt with bodies and spirits. He knew it all, and so if you're sick, I can fix that. I can fix that. I can fix that. If you're in your sin, I can fix that. And if you're out of your sin, you're forgiven, I can help you until you die. And I'll see you over here. Incredibly, Jesus always knew what was wrong. Number six, His remedies always worked. Sometimes, you know, doctors send us home with a prescription. We'll try this. In fact, He'll tell you that sometimes. Now, we're just going to hit at it generally. We're not sure exactly what it is yet, or right now, but we're going to give you some medicine that'll cover a lot of different things that it could be. And so they're really saying we're experimenting. We're experimenting. Now, if this doesn't work, you call me in a few weeks and we'll try something else. Or you come back and see me. Jesus' remedies always work. Matthew 12:22, Mark 5:30, Mark 8:22. Even when he wanted to show that he could measure out power, Mark 8, where he takes a blind man and he heals him to a point. And then he says, how is it? He says, I see, but it's blurry. He took a blind man on purpose and started working on him. But he wanted to show the minute control that he had over divine power. And so he starts and gives him some power. How is it? What do you see? I see men, but they look like trees. It's a blur, but it's better than I had. And then he finished it. That's the only case, as I've mentioned before, in which Jesus demonstrated that unique distribution of power. So it's not that it just has to explode. It's not that it's out of control. Divine power is always, every time, whether it's being used physically or spiritually, it is always under complete control. Unlike a man whose power sometimes get out of control, that's not God. And that's not the great physician. His power is always channeled and measured because His remedies always work. Number seven, you know, sometimes He prescribed rest. I can remember when I was a kid, I'm sure my grandfather, my daddy's father, thought I was spoiled to death. And I was. Given the way that my grandfather had been raised, see, he had been raised in a pioneer family. He was at work when he was 12 years old driving a team of horses in an oil field. 12 years old? We've got kids today, 12 years old, can't figure out much of anything. Not only do they not know the fundamentals of, you know, education, they're totally irresponsible. Just about everything. Can you imagine a young person growing up learning responsibility? Now, sometimes country people have an advantage over city people because they still got ways of, you know, encouraging responsibility. And that's good. But anyway, I was a little child, and I'm sure to him I looked just like a spoiled brat. And anyway, he knew I was going to the doctor. So when I got home that day, he said, what did the doctor say? And I said, he told me to take it easy. That just tickled him to death. Take it easy? He didn't see how it was possible for me to take it any easier than I already was. Do you know that Jesus in Matthew 11 prescribed rest? Come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Sometimes you need rest. And if you live in sin, you're practicing sin, you've lost your way, you need remedy, you need relief, you need rest. And that's what He makes possible. Matthew 11, 28 through 30. Number 8, right quickly. You know, Jesus on occasion had a tremendous reputation when people would hear about His healings, the things that He would do. In Mark 3, verse 7, and I want you to look there with me quickly. Mark 3, verse 7. And Jesus with His disciples withdrew to the sea, and a great multitude from Galilee followed, and from Judea. Mark 3, 7. And from Jerusalem, and from Idumea, and beyond the Jordan, and about Tyre and Sidon, a great multitude, hearing what great things He did, came unto Him. And He spake to His disciples that a little boat should wait on Him because of the crowd, lest they should throng Him, for He had healed many, insomuch that as many as had plagues pressed upon Him, that they might touch Him. And the unclean spirits, whensoever they beheld Him, fell down before Him and cried, saying, Thou art the Son of God. And He charged them much that they should not make Him known. Well, that's quite a scene right there that Mark relates to us. That He had such an overwhelming reputation because people were hearing, have you heard about Jesus? Do you know what He did to my neighbor? Do you know what He did to my son? Do you know what I heard happened down in Judea? Do you know what happened in Galilee last week? Have you heard about Jesus? The great physician. If you think about Him in those terms, He had a tremendous reputation. Tremendous reputation. And number 9, He was overrun with patience. We see it right here, but go back to Mark 1. Look back in Mark chapter 1 and verse 32. And at even, when the sun did set, they brought unto Him all that were sick, and them that were possessed with demons. And all the city was gathered together at the door. And He healed many that were sick with divers diseases, and cast out many demons. And He suffered not the demons to speak because they knew Him. So on various occasions, He'd be at a certain place and people would hear about Him being there. And given the fact that He'd already done so much or healed somebody perhaps that they knew of, and they would just throng Him or come to the area where He was. Maybe we can get an audience. Maybe He'll do something for us. He was overrun with patience. We sometimes, you know, drive by a place, maybe an eating place. We're hungry. And we sometimes judge the quality of the place by the number of vehicles that are out front. Have you ever done that? My goodness, this must be a good place. This must be a sorry place. Whether we're right or we're wrong, we look at it kind of like that. I'm simply saying, Jesus Christ didn't lack for patience. We sometimes have people in our culture now, doctors, who advertise for business. That wasn't the case when I was growing up. It wasn't like that. But it became fashionable and acceptable to allow them to do that. Jesus had plenty of patience. Not that he was wanting more, asking for more, trying to get more, no. But just being here and having the capacity he had because of who he was, he had a lot of patience. And number 10, the great physician was great because he would take the worst cases, some of the most heartbreaking cases, and heal them. You know, sometimes, if you're like me, and sometimes I'll just put it on mute or I'll go to another station, I don't want to be told day after day after day about the most heartbreaking cases in America. That's tough on your system. I don't want to see that every day. I know they're trying to raise funds, but I've seen that. And I know what they are, what they're after, and all of that. But brethren, you know as well as I do, you don't even have to know somebody. And you look at that and good night, that's awful. Imagine, of course, when it's somebody you love up close and know how awful it is. You know, Jesus never turned somebody down because, well, this is so extreme. This is so heart-wrenching. This is on the verge of impossibility. It was never like that with him. In Mark 9:20, he healed that lad that had been sick since he was a youth. In Mark 5:22-23, he healed Jairus' little girl. My little daughter is sick and at the point of death. I was talking to a friend of mine yesterday. She's the widow of a preacher in Tennessee, a good friend of our family for many, many years. And I was asking her in the conversation about some other people that are mutual acquaintances. They visited out here, Jerry and Helen Whitman, years and years ago. And I said, have you heard anything about the Whitmans? Saw them just a few days ago. And they're frail. They're old. And she said regarding him, he's about as low as he can get. Meaning, and still be alive. Well, that's sad. That's sad. If they're friends. But you know, Jesus could handle that. And in the first century, the cases that hurt the most, the worst, the most extreme, it wasn't bothersome. It didn't wear on him. He didn't turn them down. And anybody today that's living in sin, you don't need to think that you're beyond the purview of the healing power of Jesus Christ. It's not like that. Two more points and I'll quit. Number 11. The great physician even kept on healing people after he left the earth. Have you ever known anybody else like that? After Jesus ascended to the Father's right hand, He sent the Holy Spirit that empowered certain members of the church with what are called in 1 Corinthians 12:9, gifts of healing. My, my. So even according to Mark 16, the last two verses, after Jesus was back in heaven, He was helping the apostles carry out the Great Commission and working with them, confirming the Word by signs. By signs. Some of those entail the gifts of healing. And so what's our point? Our point is that even after He left the earth, He continued to be able to heal. Paul performed what are called special miracles in Acts 19:11-12, as you recall. And my last point is, and this is staggering, of course, And that is that Jesus could heal a man even after he had died. There had never been and never will be anybody else in that category of physician. Like John 11, where he heals Lazarus. He raised the Jairus' daughter from the dead. The widow of Nain's son he raised from the dead. You see, he never lost the case in that sense. You know, Marshall Keble, that great black gospel preacher of days gone by, he said that Jesus was the doctor who never lost the case. Never lost the case. And the power, I'm saying, even went beyond death. So that if you die before I get there, what's the big deal? What's the big deal? All Christians who have died so far have died before Jesus got here for the second time. All Christians that have died before Jesus got here the second time. Maybe we'll die. Hebrews 9:27, that's the norm. Even if you die before I get there, what's the big deal? The spiritual healing powers of the great physician are enormous, even to the raising of the dead back to life. John 5:28-29, marvel not at this, the dead shall hear the voice, His voice. They're going to come forth, He said. They that have done good to the resurrection of life. They that have done evil to the resurrection of judgment. So that's an incredible fact. And these are incredible facts in this set of facts. When you think about medicine, a doctor's visit, being sick, you think about the great physician Jesus. He was the great physician. Not just a physician, He was the great physician. Whether you're talking about physically, or whether you're talking about ultimately the salvation of the souls of man. And thank God that it is so. What kind of doctor do you have? Who is your physician? The great physician.